All right, the next matter on the call is case number 21-159, State versus Rodriguez. The counsel for the appellee is here. Counsel for the appellant appears to be appearing remotely. Okay, counsel for the appellant, Mr. Dugan, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Thank you.
Is there a way to turn the volume up a little bit? Thank you.
Who else do we have appearing here remotely?
Honors, I believe we were at it a little too soon. We're
next
here
for the Mr. RT. 21-159, State versus Rodriguez. Counsel for the appellee is here.
We should only have Mr. Dugan appearing.
Appearing remotely.
Be patient a second through all as we work through it. No problem. Take your time. There we go. There we go. You betcha. Okay, one more time, Mr. Dugan. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Thank you very much. Are you ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor.
Let's do it.
All right. Brandon Dugan for the appellant, Daniel Rodriguez. Your Honors, we're here today based upon a conviction of my client for possession of cocaine with intent to distribute, weight, and habitual criminal enhancement. There are two parts predominantly. One goes to the conviction itself, which is the suppression, essentially the suppression. This was based on a stipulated bench trial. There were approximately three evidentiary hearings that kind of take up the entire matter of the suppression. While the trial court initially denied the suppressions of the searches based on standing, the appellee's arguments in their brief essentially contest that, or doesn't contest that my client has standing, and instead turned on the appropriateness of the search. I think in looking at the totality of the circumstances, there was not probable cause for the search. Predominantly, we see this in a couple of things. One, this is a routine traffic stop that that my client is stopped, identified, and taken back to the car. This happens in less than, I think, about 70 seconds. And in that time, he's placed under arrest for driving under suspension, put in the car. They ask my client, who owns the car? He says, my friend does. He identifies his friend, Mr. Perez, and then the officer calls into dispatch to check to see who the verified registrant is of the vehicle. During that time, the officer walks back up to the car, opens it up, starts moving things around. The first thing that he does is pick up a wrapper that thinks it's on the ground. Then there's a my client's cell phone that's sitting on the center console. He picks that up, moves it, and then opens the center console, where it proceeds to pull items one after another that are on top of each other. I understand that at the hearing, the officer had testified that that wasn't exactly the order, but the exhibit that's referenced for that video shows quite a bit different, and I do cite that in my brief. The officer's basis.
And if I might ask a question here, please. You said a routine traffic stop, but wasn't there evidence that your client evaded the officer for some period of time?
No, the traffic stop, it's on 2nd Avenue, which is the main thoroughfare in Kearney. He sees the car coming and initiates his radar. As the car is coming up to where the officer's position is, he brakes, changes lane, the officer gets behind him. This happens in basically going around a block. So it's the addresses are referenced in the briefs and in the bill of exceptions. So it goes around one block, takes right, goes to the end of that block, takes another right. That's where the car stops. The officer initiates his initiates his overhead lights when they're still on 2nd Avenue. He initiates the spotlight when they get to after the first turn, and then leaves the spotlight on adjusting it as we're coming around. So in the exhibit shown from the car video, you see going around the first turn, and then you see the car turn and then coming around again. During that time, the officer is saying he's seeing furtive movements, as he calls them. The video doesn't really establish that. They just show essentially my client in the driver's seat, sole occupant, no one else there. Even if it was a furtive movement, I don't think that gives rise to a search. The issue being that he gets arrested for driving under suspension. The officer acknowledges that's the reason he arrests him, and he arrests him right away. I think in looking at Arizona v. Gant, we see that, you know, just a traffic violation by itself isn't going to get to a search. The officer testified that there were essentially one other reason, other than the furtive movements, which he testified was about officer safety. However, he called for backup and never waited for backup to go approach him. So I think that that's dubious. But the second part was that he had contact with my client 15 months beforehand, and that was testified to at the suppression hearing. We object to his, as far as staleness, I think that that's really a stale argument to try to say that some activity 15 months ago, there are a few cases I cited in my brief talking about other staleness arguments in the context of search warrants being 5 months plus being there, that would be stale.
But the standard for search warrants is different, isn't it? Because then you do need more recent in time information for a probable cause analysis. There's no cases that talk about a time standard, is there?
In this specific context, no, because this is under the automobile exception. And I think that still goes into the totality of the circumstances and looking at whether the officer actually had probable cause, a reasonable suspicion or anything other than just some inchoate idea about what was going on here. As he stops him for essentially a speeding, arrests him for a DUS, and then without doing really any more investigation, immediately goes into the car and starts moving things around.
Well, so you've agreed that we look at the totality of the circumstances, right? And so if we consider that your client didn't stop immediately when the overhead lights were activated and made two turns and went two blocks. And the officer says he saw furtive movements. The video is a little fuzzy there. And the officer has knowledge of at least some prior drug activity by your client. You don't think that's enough under the totality of the circumstances to establish probable cause?
Well, no. And here's one specific thing that, as you can see in the video, the initial street where the headlights come on right prior to the first turn is a 4-lane street in which it would not be safe to stop at. The second street is a two-lane road. However, that, as far as parking, is also dubious. This can be seen on the video. After the second turn, where the stop is, I believe that is a safe, that would be a safe place to search. So the officer's contention that my client was trying to evade him, I think, is rather spurious. And when looked at the totality of the evidence, particularly the videos, the exhibits that were presented during the hearing.
Mr. Dugan, can you clarify for me at what point was it in this chain of events that the officer recognized your client?
He testified that upon him walking up to the vehicle and being able to, I think on the officer's body camera, walks up, the window comes down, he looks in, and that's where he identifies.
So it's after the vehicle was stopped?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
I see that I'm in my rebuttal time. I'd like to reserve the remainder. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Counsel for the appellee.
May it please the court. My name is Austin Relf. I represent the state of Nebraska. Rodriguez argues that the district court committed reversible error by 1, overruling his various motions to suppress, and 2, finding that he was a habitual criminal and imposing allegedly excessive sentence. As set forth in my brief, I'll detail here shortly, we disagree. In short, basically, we think the challenge search of the vehicle was permissible under the automobile exception. The challenge statements were not obtained in violation of Miranda, or in the alternative, their admission was harmless error. And then the habitual criminal issue, we don't think was properly preserved for appeal, and the sentence imposed was basically the minimum, so it was not excessive. I'll move straight to the automobile exception, the search issue. Based on sort of the tenor of Judge Moore's questions, you know, we agree that the totality of the circumstances basically created probable cause to search. There's no question the vehicle is readily mobile, obviously. And then, as I said in my brief, as far as the totality of the circumstances, we've got the evasive action taken by the defendant, which the district court credited, I think, in his order. The furtive movements as well, the district court credited that in its order, finding a fact. It may not be shown perfectly on the video, as Judge Moore acknowledged, but the officer testified to it, and credibility determination made. And then, of course, as Your Honor pointed out, he recognized the defendant immediately upon approaching the vehicle, knew that he had been previously involved and arrested for possession of cocaine. It was August 25th, 2018, so a little more than a year ago. Knew that he was a convicted felon, knew that he had a suspended license. We think all that together clearly, obviously meets the probable cause standard to believe there's contraband in the vehicle, and that justified the search.
Mr. Relf, if I can ask you about the furtive movements, are you aware of any cases under the automobile exception and the probable cause standard that talk about furtive movements as being a factor in the totality of the circumstances?
I don't recall the name offhand, but there's one involving my colleague, prior colleague Joe Meyer. I think it was Judge Castle's opinion in the Nebraska Supreme Court that talked about furtive movements. But it's just, I think other jurisdictions, other cases have all acknowledged that it's just a factor to consider. It's one of the factors I think appropriately considered here. And like I said, we think the totality clearly met the threshold for probable cause.
Does it make any difference as it relates to the totality of the circumstances here that they weren't investigating him or pulling him over for a drug crime or following up? They pulled him over for speeding. Doesn't pull over right away. Officer says, I see some furtive movements, and said recognizes him as being a convicted felon involving a drug charge. Those three things are sufficient for an officer to then search the car? That's probable cause?
Yes, we have, like I said, the evasive action, the furtive movements toward the center console, the prior history with drugs, the driving convicted felon driving under suspension, yes, I think that meets the burden for probable cause to believe there's contraband in the vehicle.
We have any cases that you can cite or anywhere close to that? That seems to open the door pretty wide, you know, furtive movements. Police officer, I saw some furtive movements in the car, pulled them over for speeding. I recognize them as historically have, you know, criminal conduct, didn't pull over right away. Does that rise to the level of probable cause?
We think it does, yes. Furtive movements, they're not by themselves here. You've also got, like I said, the evasive action, the prior history with drugs, the convicted felon status. I do not have a case specifically in mind right now with just those facts. Fourth Amendment cases obviously are very fact specific. Mm-hmm. I would reference again the case with Judge Castle and my prior colleague Joe Meyer that talked about furtive movements. But it's just, these are sort of acknowledged. We give the officer, as the district court here did, some credence for his training, history, experience. Furtive movements are relevant. They are probative of whether the probable cause existed. And we think based on the circumstances here, we clearly had probable cause.
Did the state concede the standing issue?
No, I did not concede it. It just seemed to me to be more of a sticky issue when, in our view, the challenge search was clearly constitutional. So I just moved past the standing and addressed the merits of the search. But no, I did not concede it. You know, looking at different jurisdictions, authorities, I think the facts are kind of unique here in terms of how he came into possession of the car. He wasn't, you know, like a thief. He was just told not to drive, and yet the testimony kind of waffled back and forth a bit on that. So, like I said, we didn't concede it. I just moved to what I considered to be the easier route to affirm, which is that we had probable cause and the automobile exception applied. As far as the statements, the first statement happened before he was in custody, before he was arrested, and so Miranda did not apply in our view. And then the second statement, you know, like I said, it occurred a little bit after that, but would be harmless error because dispatch came forward and explained, you know, that it wasn't his car. So even if there was a Miranda violation, sure, the statement would be out, but the other evidence established the same fact. And in any event, we're talking about drug possession here, and the fact that a statement came in violation of Miranda, if it did, would not allow for exclusion of the physical evidence that obtained here. And then the habitual criminal excessive sentence issue, unless this court has questions, I'd submit that on the brief. Habitual, I don't think, was assigned. And he was basically given the minimum sentence 10 to 15 for a habitual criminal. So I don't think it was excessive. Unless this court has additional questions, we'd ask that you affirm the judgment.
Thank you. And then counsel had reserved what?
We have 1 minute and 45 seconds.
1:45. Mr. Dugan.
Yes, may I begin?
Yes, please.
Thank you. So, as far as furtive movement case law, there's not a lot that I could find in Nebraska. I quoted Marcupolis v. State, which is from the Texas Court of Appeals, which I think, while not binding, is very instructive. And that they have developed a lot of case law as it goes with that. In that case, there were discussion of, I believe, 4 different cases that court had looked at within their own jurisdiction, 2 of which they found did constitute probable cause, but it was always attached to some other object. The officer saw a bag, saw a matchbox or something like that. And so it was the furtive movements plus an object plus the attempt to conceal it. That's patently different from here, as my client's phone is on the center console. And just objectively from looking at it, that can explain any type of evidence. I believe during the second suppression hearing, evidence of the extraction report from that cell phone was submitted, which included essentially he had text the owner of the vehicle saying, "I'm getting pulled over," or something to that effect. So I think that's different. So while Marcupolis v. State is not binding, I think it's rather instructive and would be very helpful in the court in looking at those circumstances. On the opposite side, the other two cases, including Markubius that they've looked at, had cases where it was furtive movements by themselves didn't constitute probable cause under the totality of the circumstances. And so I would submit on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Thank you both.
Thank you.